The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show about everything.
And we do mean everything.
Yes, even that. Yep, and that too.
Oh, you bet. Definitely that.
Now here's everything you want to know, host Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. This is a very, very special edition of the show because it's Tuesday following Memorial Day Monday. Guys, does it feel like Memorial Day? I don't think so.
No.
We couldn't go to the beach because there's some kind of virus, they say. And it was also because it was like about 60 degrees and windy. So we didn't go to the beach. But today is a very special and important day. I'll say why. First of all, in hour two, we're talking to my friend Jim Dennison about what does God think of America? That is an interesting conversation. So that's hour two. In hour one, we're going to be talking about free speech. Something happened to me over the weekend, which I think is a, you know, it's a learning opportunity. it's a teaching moment. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to try to explain it. Right. I have long felt and said many, many times that things have changed so dramatically in the Democratic Party and that the people on the left have kind of hijacked what was once an okay party in many ways. A lot of friends of mine prefer the Democratic Party, but something happened and they're kind of taken over by what we now call the woke mob, people for whom there can never be justice. It's the eternal battle. You can never give anybody a compliment and say that was good. You just have to tell them what they're still doing wrong and probably will never get right. And America is bad, 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 bad dog, and can never be given credit for abolishing slavery or abolishing the slave trade or having a Civil Rights Act and getting rid. We don't want to give anybody credit for that. We just want to focus on the negative. And so we've gotten to this absurd situation now where there are people on the left who are self-appointed guardians of truth. And by truth, I mean lies, of course. So last, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was Thursday morning or Friday morning. I can't remember which. But Joe Biden, this is classic. Like, you cannot make this stuff up. Joe Biden, an elderly white man, is having a conversation with Chris, you probably know Charlemagne the God. Is that who it is?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so.
And what is he, a rapper, a comedian? I can never figure this out. A poet. The bottom line is he's a young black man who is not sold on Biden. So he's having a conversation with, you know, the former vice president who is going to be the nominee for the Democrats. And the conversation had to get wrapped up early because Biden had something else going on. So he kind of cuts off Charlemagne the God and says, got to go. And Charlemagne the God says, well, I still got some more questions, just so you understand. I'm not like sold on your candidacy. He was very polite. And Biden said something, you know, in his half jokey way, but maybe we have the clip, James, you have that?
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump and you ain't black,
it don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has.
Okay. So Joe Biden, the white man, says, if you have trouble figuring out whether to vote for me or Trump, then you ain't black. Okay. So there are two levels of kookiness, right? Number one, that he would, in his jokey but presumptive way, tell the black man that he's not black if he has trouble voting for Trump. Now, this ties into this whole big important narrative that the Democrats have effectively bullied blacks into thinking that unless you vote for us, you're voting against yourself. That's a lie. And it's been a lie for quite some time. It's not maybe something that was always a lie, but it certainly is by now. And so Biden pulls that, you know, plays that card, and in playing the card goes into black lingo. Then you ain't black. Now, he wouldn't say ain't, but he figures, you know, I want to be down with the black man. I want to speak his language and show him that we're all one. So I'm going to use the word ain't. So, of course, this becomes an object of fun. People find it funny. Some people get angry. The way that the Democrats have co-opted, you know, the black vote should make people angry. It's bad. But the way that Biden uses the word ain't there, it's any number of things. I at least think it's hilarious because this is what the Democrats do all the time. Old white Democrats do this all the time. And so I put out a tweet making fun of this. I said that the Biden, you know, tried to walk that back, but failed. And, you know, he tried to correct himself and restated it. And in the restatement, he said something that was even more racial sounding, even more like him trying to sound super black. Right. Now, what most people didn't get, and that's on me, because when you put a joke out there, you need to know on Twitter, most people on Twitter are not that smart. Twitter's an ugly place, and there are a lot of nasty, ignorant people. And to top off everything, they're not going to get part of the joke. So part of the joke was in my tweet that Biden actually said, you know, not that many years ago, I guess he was when he and Barack Obama were running against Romney, he said something about the GOP. They want to put y'all back in chains or something. It was even worse than what he said. Let's see if we have that clip.
They're going to put y'all back in chains.
They're going to put y'all back in chains, right? So he changes his intonation and he feels comfortable enough talking to black audience to let them know, like, if you don't vote for me, those guys are going to put y'all back in chains, right? So it's really incendiary and crazy. And he's done it a number of times. Hillary Clinton has done it. We don't have those clips, but she has done it. So it's really, really silly. So I put out a tweet along these lines, making fun of this faux black language that super white folks like Biden use. Now, to give you an idea of how out of touch Biden is on the race issue, when Obama first was running, do we remember what he said about Barack Obama? Let's see if we have that clip.
I mean, you got the first sort of mainstream African American,
yeah,
who was articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook, man.
Articulate and bright and clean. Clean. Okay, so that's what Biden said. Now, here's the issue. Here's the irony of this. My attitude is, I would give Biden grace. In other words, I find this all funny in a way that he's this old guy and he says these things, he's out of touch, whatever. But people only have one mode, either ignore it, he never said it, or go after him like jackals smelling blood because no one should be allowed to say these things because we have deemed them racist and whatever. So, you know, I turn it into what I think of as a joke, making reference to the put y'all back in chains and da, 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 and I put it out on Twitter. And rather quickly, a number of self-styled arbiters of what is something you can say and something you can't say, people, you know, who have a fuzzy view of free speech decided to freak out and ban me. Not all, you know, some people just said, oh, Eric, you know, please take this down or whatever. But almost immediately, the mobs arose, okay, from the swamp. It's an unbelievable thing. And I'm actually beginning to think that there are people paid by George Soros to do this, because you can't have this kind of number of people just go insane over a tweet like this and just tweet. And keep in mind, most of those tweets were vulgar, super nasty. I mean, the kind of thing that if you want to know if somebody is saying something because they care about racism or just because they're bitter, nasty people. So it was just a tsunami of filth directed at that tweet. When we come back, the happy ending of this story is the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey, folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. Okay, it's Tuesday, but because yesterday was Memorial Day, we're treating it as a Monday, and I have a small miracle story to tell, a happy, cute miracle story. Maybe it's not even a miracle. Maybe it was just kind of a blessing. I don't know. You can be the judge of that, but I'll tell that in a minute. But just to get real, to get back to this issue of this tweet, right? So a couple of interesting things. On Twitter, the level of filth and viciousness over this kind of tells you what you're dealing with. In other words, I have a couple of friends who are real friends who thought I should take it down or apologize or something like that. When somebody like that says something like that, I take it seriously. In other words, these are people that have earned the right to say something. But on Twitter, which is a nasty, sick place, unfortunately, this is, you know, the bile that comes out, the demonic filth that comes out, it just reminds me of the, you know, 1790s mobs in the French Revolution. They just want blood and they feel so self-justified that they would never make a mistake and they just want to see blood and revenge and whatever it is. So they come out of the woodwork and say these nasty things. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't really want to respond to those people. Like, I'm just not going to justify what they say. So I'm just going to try to somehow stay out of it, although it's difficult. But I say this just because, you know, what you don't see on Twitter is grace, right? In other words, when people want to label me a racist, how do I not laugh at that? Because I wrote a 300-page book about the man who led the battle for the abolition of the slave trade. Like, do people make most people on Twitter who are obviously not terribly well read probably are not aware of the name Wilberforce, much less the fact that I wrote a book praising him and his efforts, right? So you need a little context, you know, if you want to attack plausibly. In all of my seven books, my seven men, seven women, seven more men, there are black figures in those books that I obviously think the world of, otherwise I wouldn't have picked them to be, you know, these are some of the greatest heroes of our time, from Rosa Parks to Jackie Robinson and George Washington Carver, like, brings tears to my eyes. So there's no context. People are just vicious, bitter. They don't really want to know, are you racist? They just want to know, can I get you? Can I win a point? So that's ugly. And I think that, you know, we really have to all try not to do that. Now, that said, in retrospect, I wouldn't have put that tweet up. Why? Not because I myself think it's racist, but because I think that when you're dealing with Twitter, you are inevitably dealing with people that they don't want to hear what you're actually saying. They want to twist it and whatever. So you're almost in a space that is so filled with woke maniacs that wisdom says, don't go there. And I get that. And then there are people, maybe, whom I would genuinely have offended. And to those people, I do apologize to those people, because I don't think it's impossible to be sensitive about those things. I also don't think it's possible never to offend anybody, but I just think that, you know, we need to try and stuff. So for those people, I do apologize, which is why eventually I took it down. But to the woke mobs, I mean, we're dealing, it's a weird, weird world. Just to give you an example of how insane things are, okay? I think this was yesterday. I see that somebody has posted a clip. I was in the dressing room with Milo Yiannopoulos, okay? Famously, openly gay figure. And I was talking to him about drag queens, and we were joking around or whatever. This person on the other end of the spectrum decides to out me as being pro drag queen, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, Jesus said, we played the pipe and you did not dance. We sang a dirge and you did not mourn. You're like the children of this generation is like children in the marketplace. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So we're living in just crazy, crazy times. And I just wanted to say that. I mean, anybody who knows me knows that real racism makes me very angry. I'll give you an example. How many people who tweeted against me don't give a darn about what the Chinese Communist Party is doing to Uyghur Muslims? Okay. That is an example of grotesque, horrific, genuine racism happening now, now. And if you don't speak up against the Communist Party and what they're doing stuff in Hong Kong, they're doing stuff all around the world. They don't believe in any of the things we believe in. Okay. They don't believe in God. They don't believe racism is wrong. They don't believe in right and wrong. They just believe in the power of the Communist Party. And we need to criticize them. That's real racism. Now, if there are people that are criticizing that and they want to say to me, hey, Eric, you need to tone that down, I will listen to them. I will take that seriously. Okay, happy story. Happy story. You guys ready for the happy story? You're not.
Please. No, yeah. please. Yeah. A happy yeah. story, please.
Yeah, let me hear it.
Okay.
I look forward to listening to it and then shaming you.
We have two happy stories, actually. Most people listening to this program know that we're doing a campaign with Angel Tree to help the children of prisoners, some of whom are people of color, just in case you wanted to know if we cared about Black people. And I got to tell you, Angel Tree and Prison Fellowship have done more to help the families of prisoners. I just want my audience to know, if you want to give to an organization that is good, right? Colorblind good. Good to anybody out there that they can help just because of the love of Christ to reach out to prisoners and to reach to their families. Angel Tree, to me, is at the top of the list. And so we've been sending a lot of the kids whose parents are in prison. We send them to summer camp for $200. They get to go to summer camp to get out of their neighborhoods and to see something different and to hang out with people that love God and love them and show them love, and really, really wonderful opportunity. So every $200 you give can send a kid to camp. Now, because the COVID thing, some of these kids can't go to camp, and they're getting these beautiful care packages. We know these families are suffering. Maybe the one parent they have has lost a job. So for $200, they get a grocery card. For $150, they get a sports item, whether a soccer ball or whatever it is they get to pick. They get a Bible. They get some Bible study aids. They get a letter that tells them how much God loves them. I mean, the whole thing is so beautiful. And we were trying to guilt trip you, trying to shame you into giving to Angel Tree. You go to MetaxasTalk.com and you see the banner. And the guilt tripping and the shaming obviously worked, because our goal was 130 kids helped, and we are at almost 220. And so to those of you who responded to our shaming you, I want to say thank you. Seriously, though, we still need more help. There's an infinite number of these kids out there. So if you will go to MetaxasTalk.com. I don't know if anybody has the phone number. You can read it out on the air right now. But
I do have the phone number. It's 1-888. Don't tell me. 1-888-206-2793. 1-888-206-2793.
Okay, 888-206-2793. If you want to do some good in this ugly, wacky, sometimes racist world, 888-206-2793, 888-206-2793, 888-206-2793, or just go to MetaxasTalk.com. But this is a great thing. This is good news, folks. People, out of the goodness of their hearts, are giving money to help people that they'll never meet. Okay, that's America. And that's the church in America, okay? And there are a lot of non-Christians who also give to this. And those people they're doing God's work. So if you go to MetaxasTalk.com and click on the banner, or 888-206-2793, but we want to raise as much money as possible. because there's any number of kids that are not going to get the care package or get to go to camp. So it's up to us. Everybody do what you can. There's all kinds of prizes that we give you. We're not going to tell you about that right now. Okay. I'm going to tell you real quick about my tiny miracle story. Saturday, I'm in Jersey with my family, visiting grandma, and I want to go for a run. The weather was crummy, whatever. And I couldn't find earbuds anywhere that fit my phone. My daughter didn't have any. Suzanne didn't have any. I looked everywhere for mine. They're gone. So, you know, I have the prospect of a very long run, you know, kind of a boring area with nothing to listen to. So what can I do? I go for a run. So I go for a run. I decide at one point to do something that I've never done before, which is go down some railroad tracks. So it's a long thing of railroad tracks. I start going down the railroad tracks. And at some point I stop for no reason. And I look down and I see Apple earbuds. They look like they'd been there for 2 years. I picked them up. I plugged it in. They worked. And I listened to the Eric Metaxas Show with Brian Kilmeade for the rest of my run. I cleaned them up. They're in mint condition. You explain that one, ladies and gentlemen. And a random part of a long railroad track. We're going to a break. When we come back, no safe spaces. Free speech is kind of important in case I haven't mentioned it. Christian best-selling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. I would much rather listen to the Eagles than talk to Dennis Prager. But you know what? I don't get a choice in this matter. I have to talk to Dennis Prager. It's in my contract. Dennis Prager, welcome.
That was a beautiful introduction.
Oh, my gosh. There's actually very little I'd like to do more than talk to Dennis Prager. You, my friend, are on this program to talk about a film called No Safe Spaces, a documentary. It came out this past weekend. I saw it. It is spectacular. It's better than spectacular. It is vitally important. So tell me, did it do well this past weekend?
Well, in fact, it was the highest grossing one theater opening in American history for a documentary, but it missed by $200, beating Sicko by Michael Moore.
You're not joking.
That's how.
You're not joking. $200? $200.
Yeah, as I said, had I known, I would have paid the $200.
All right, this weekend, we need to break this record, Dennis.
Well, the truth is, you're right. The truth is, and I'm not saying it because I'm in it. I have a line I use, which is totally sincere. It is not great because I'm in it. And I'm not Mr. Humble. I'm Mr. Real. I am in a great film, but it is not great because I'm in it.
No, that's absolutely true. I've seen you on camera, and it doesn't get worse than you. Dennis Prager, there's a reason you're in radio. Let me just put it that way. People like to joke, but you know I'm your friend. I would not lie. You made a film with Adam Carolla called No Safe Spaces. I want my audience to hear about this. I saw the whole thing. It is spectacular. It is vitally important for America.
Yeah.
Please tell my audience.
Right. Look, people should see it because it's a great film. But people have a moral obligation to see it, if I'm allowed to say such a thing. Because if we don't support non-left-wing films, then we can't start complaining, oh, Hollywood only puts out left-wing stuff.
Well, I've said that a million times, and I feel that so strongly. It's why I wanted to have you on this program. I mean, I would have you on this program, you know, 20 times to talk about this, because there are certain things that must succeed. If people complain and complain about what's happening in America, and then they don't take the trouble to see this film or tell their friends to see this film, then I want to say to them, you can't complain, because these people made a great film. I've seen it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Honestly, Dennis, it is absolutely wonderful.
I've seen it four times.
You've seen it four times. Does your performance improve with each watching?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good. You're way too hard on yourself. No joke. This film is about one of the most important things of our time, if not the most important things, because it's about liberty. But tell why
you know
it's
what?
Yeah.
You
go.
You know what? Let me tell your audience something. Okay. As painful as it is, I'm going to tell them. You are one of the few who understands what's happening in America, and I say it as praise of you. But I say it with great sadness that the word few had to precede it, that Americans are not aware of the greatest threat to free speech in the history of America. It is almost astonishing to me. How could people be oblivious? So this film is a wake-up call. It shows what is happening, particularly on our campuses.
I'm glad you think that I'm one of the few people who really understands this. Unfortunately, I agree with you in the sense that I am trying in my own way to get word out about this. The film really and truly is very entertaining and very important. The only thing I missed in the film was my own performance. I should have been in the film. I could have played you in the film, and I would have done at least as good a job. But that's not – look, we're not here – to praise me any more than I've already been praised. Thank you very much. But I got to tell you, seriously, the subject of the film, I want my audience to understand, if they go to this, what are they going to see? Because I think they should, every young person in America must see this film. Your parents, who pay for your school and your clothes and everything, they can force you to see this film, and they should.
That's right. And the parents need to know, obviously, what they're paying their hard-earned money for. Why Americans are in $1 trillion of debt for the right not to speak. It's almost unbelievable, actually, what people will see. And people, I said non-left, because we have a lot of liberals in the film who speak about the horrors of what the left is doing. This is my goal, aside from the film. This is not the film's, the film is not really that particularly political. The film is about an emergency in America, entertainingly and urgently given. But my goal, one of my biggest goals, is to have liberals understand what Professor Alan Dershowitz says in the film to me in his apartment in Manhattan. And I am close to quoting, but it's a paraphrase. Dennis, as a liberal, as a Hillary Clinton supporter, as a Democrat, as an American, and as a Jew, I fear the left far more than the right.
When I heard him say that in the film, you know, I was stunned to hear him say that, because there are people who are Democrats who see this as clearly as we do, and he is one of them. We're going to go to a break. We're going to come back with Dennis Prager. Folks, the film is No Safe Spaces, and you know It is these things are vital. Please, please, if you can afford it.
NoSafeSpaces.com.
NoSafeSpaces.com will tell you everything you need to know. NoSafeSpaces.com. Please see it this weekend. We'll be right back.
Monster Mash. The Monster Mash. It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
Hey there, folks. That's the Monster Mash. Bobby, Boris Pickett, and the Crypt Kicker Five. It doesn't get better than that.
No,
it literally, it's the only Halloween song worth listening to. Maybe the theme song from the Munsters. We're talking to a friend of mine, Dennis Prager, about a film that almost broke an all-time record, but for $200, which would all make us all feel deeply ashamed. That Michael Moore still has the number one spot. It's called No Safe Spaces. Dennis Prager, tell my audience, if you would, what this film gets into and some details, because between the joking, I don't know if we covered that.
The film is essentially about the assault on free speech that is unprecedented, literally unprecedented in American history. As many of your listeners probably know, there was a recent poll. 50% of Americans believe the First Amendment should be changed, should be amended to say essentially, yes, there's free speech except for hate speech, which, of course, means there's no free speech. That's the end of free speech definitionally. The name No Safe Spaces comes from the existence of safe spaces on most American campuses. I have actually seen such places. There, that is the place you go to if a conservative speaker comes to your university and you cannot handle it emotionally.
Do they have,
so you
like
go there? You,
yeah, but I mean, when we talk about safe spaces, I always think of it as metaphorical. You're telling me there are literal places called safe spaces?
Yes.
Are they like root cellars? Do they have like Slim Jims and water purification tablets? What is going on down there?
Padded walls.
You're not far. You are given hot chocolate. You are given Play-Doh to play with.
All right, this is not a joke. Dennis, we joke around so much, people aren't going to believe you. You're being deadly serious right now that undergraduates are given hot chocolate and Play-Doh.
As a religious man who believes in the divinity of the Bible, I give you my word, there are physical places. I'm not done. You're given hot chocolate, Play-Doh. You are given stuffed animals to hold and watch frolicking kittens on a video.
Frolicking kittens, you say?
And when the conservative speaker leaves campus, you feel free to leave your safe space.
This is the infantilization.
That is exactly what it is.
Young men and women.
The only difference between kindergarten and college is the age of the kinder.
People who understand German or Yiddish understand that kinder means children. I have to tell you, Dennis, this is, you know, when you said that there's an assault on free speech, it's unprecedented. There's no question that that is true, which is why it is very hard for young people to process, because they think that this is normal. They don't understand that this is madness. And I think anytime there's hysteria in history, when you think of what happened in Germany in the 30s, it seems sort of normal to some people. They think, well, this is reality. But to other people, they say, this is madness. How is this happening? That's how I feel about this. That's why the film is so important.
We are drowning in hysteria. It's a very sad period in American life. The irony is, it is almost heaven for most Americans at this time. It is unprecedented. Peace, prosperity, opportunity. It is so good life I have an equation you will like, and that is secularism plus affluence equals boredom, and the bored do a lot of damage.
Oh, I mean, we've seen this through history. I mean, it's obvious. It, you know, it reminds us of Marie Antoinette, you know, playing shepherdess. I mean, when you really have everything, you kind of crack up and you go back to childhood. There's no, I mean, if bullets are flying over your head, it's much easier to be focused on what's real. But if you have everything handed to you, and this is, we know this is the downside of prosperity and why we need to teach our kids, especially what is freedom? What is the price of freedom? What is the price that has been paid for freedom? We've not been doing that for 50 years, as you say on your radio program every day. And as I say, every chance I get, and here we are. How did you get Adam Carolla involved in this, the comedian Adam Carolla?
Well, this is a match made in heaven, despite the fact that he's an atheist. He is a kindred spirit. You would adore him. Yeah, because he thinks as we do. We, of course, have profoundly religious grounding. He has none. But he has something that brings us to very similar conclusions, and that is common sense. And that's what he always says. Do you believe Dennis Prager and I are so close? And the backgrounds, which, by the way, are hilariously offered, in the movie. I mean, people will also laugh. It is, I want to emphasize, a great movie.
Now, the film also features Jordan Peterson. The only time I ever met Jordan Peterson was with you at one of your Prager University events. No academic speaks better on this subject that I can think of than Jordan Peterson.
Well, Jordan Peterson is one of the special people living, in my opinion. That comes from my heart and my mind. He is a searcher. He is courageous. See, you have, and I'll acknowledge I have and he has, unfortunately, and it's not self-praise. I'm very realistic about myself and about others. But we have what is the rarest of the good traits, courage. Jordan is an astonishing person. It all started because the province of Ontario, he's a professor at the University of Toronto, said there's a law. You must use the pronoun that somebody wants you to use. And he said, I will always be courteous to someone, but I will not be told by the government what
exactly
pronouns I can use.
I want this whole story told. When we come back from the break, we've just got a couple of minutes left with Dennis Prager. Folks, stick around. We'll be right back.
A part of the band in my Monster Mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris. I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
Hey, 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 hey.
It was a graveyard smash.
Who did the mash?
Bobby, Boris Pickett, and the Crypt Kicker 5, the Monster Mash. You know, we got to have some fun around Halloween, the satanic holiday that I don't celebrate. Hey, folks, we're talking to Dennis Prager. Dennis, you were just sharing in the film No Safe Spaces, which I'm begging my audience to go see this weekend and to drag by the scruff of their necks every young person. They will be blessed by seeing this film. But I want to ask you, you were talking about Jordan Peterson, who's in the film, and you said that he was told, he had by law, he's in Canada, to use certain pronouns, the transgender thing. And he said, look, I'm perfectly happy to be courteous to people, but the law, you think you're going to use the law to tell me how to behave? I refuse. And his entire career of late has been born out of that refusal.
Yes, he has affected millions of people, especially young people. And his message is terrific. It is one that it begins with make your own bed. This is
make your own bed. Oh, man. Yes.
Yes. You see, I always tell people, you'll like this, Eric. said the biggest difference. I went to religious Jewish school, yeshiva, till I was 18. And I tell people the biggest difference between a religious Jewish, religious Christian education on the one hand and secular education is this. In the religious school, we are taught that the biggest problem in our life is us, is me. Dennis Prager is Dennis Prager's biggest problem. That's whereas in a secular school, you are taught that society is your biggest problem.
Right.
That's why his theme begins with make your own bed.
I mean, look, Adam Smith, I just had an author on this program, I guess it was yesterday, Ryan Patrick Hanley wrote a book on Adam Smith. He's like the top Adam Smith scholar probably in the world. And it's all about how Adam Smith talks about how we have to teach virtue, how freedom, economic freedom, every kind of freedom is useless unless we teach virtue. Now, you and I talk about this, but this is the last thing that anybody on the left is able to stomach, because to them, the idea of virtue is foul. It's somehow anti-libertinism, which they confuse with liberty. And that is exactly where we are. So you have to get an academic from Toronto to tell you to make your bed, because he's the only one who's willing to say it.
That's basically what it amounts to. By the way, you're right about the virtue, of course. It's worse now. Now virtues are considered white virtues, not universal white.
White male virtues. Don't forget male. Don't forget male. And don't forget cisgender.
Well, in this case, it was restricted to what? Good grammar. This is a professor. Good grammar is white grammar. So you cannot insist that students speak properly or write properly.
Dennis, it kills me that you don't have a little more time. When are you coming back to New York? When can I see you, my friend?
You invite me. I'm on the first plane.
Oh, my gosh. I've got some fun things for you. We're going to let's talk offline for just a second. But I know you have to go, folks, in hour two.
But thank you. People should go to nosafespaces.com, see where it's playing.
Yes.
When it's playing in their city, it's rolling out across the country.
Oh, this is the weekend.
And they will thank you for pushing it.
Nosafespaces.com, nosafespaces.com, nosafespaces.com. Folks, please, please, you'll see on my Facebook page, the picture is featured. You've got to check it out. America is at stake. Dennis Prager, thank you.